Hi, I'm David Kaplan, and you're listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Enjoy the show. It's a Chevy Power Play. Now get over $8,600 total savings on a 2018 Chevy Silverado 1500 Crew Cab LT, plus an additional $2,500 in competitive owner cash. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and score. Better late than never for the Cubs offense. Derek Holland kept them in check for six innings. The bats came to life in the seventh. Meanwhile, Theo says there are a lot of trade rumors, but no trade talks. How soon do the Cubs need to think about making a big addition? Another day, another stellar outing by a Sox prospect, this time by Dylan Cease. Could he be the best pitcher in the entire Southside system? Speaking of pitchers, who's been more of a disappointment, Carson Fulmer or Lucas Giolito? Man, the champs are on the ropes. Warriors can't come through in the clutch, and now they head back to the Bay Area facing elimination. Are KD and company done, or did Chris Paul's injury give them new life? And welcome in Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Hope you're ready for a great holiday weekend and a good week. I'm David Kaplan. Panel for today's show from SB Nation Radio. He's our friend Jason Gotch. We have a legend in the house. He is the great Fred Mitchell. You remember him, long run at the Tribune. He's been on this show a billion times. And from Bleacher Report and the Big Ten Unfiltered podcast, he's our friend Seth Gruen. All right, let's get started. We had baseball this afternoon. Cubs get a 6-2 win over the San Francisco Giants. The big hit in the game, Ben Zobrist, a two-run double that broke a 1-1 tie in the seventh inning. Cubs had the bases loaded, and Zobrist, Fred, comes through. This guy, when you need a big hit in a big spot, he made a catch against the vines. He seems to do everything right.
Yeah, you know, there's probably a statistical category that quantifies what guys like Zobrist do, and that's getting big hits in the clutch, not just a batting average or some other statistic like that. And he seems to thrive on big moments. Rizzo does the same thing and came through big today.
Well, this is why they signed him. He's battle-tested. He had been through it. They brought him in for some veteran leadership. I know that Anthony Rizzo is clearly the leader in that clubhouse, but when it comes to these big moments, as we saw in the World Series, Ben Zobrist tends to be the guy.
I'm going to be 37 coming up here.
And this lineup has been so up and down this year. They seem to score in bunches, and then they just go cold like they did in the Indian series. You have a guy like Ben Zobrist who knows how to get on base. He plays a ton of different positions. As Fred said, he gets the clutch hits. Seth said he's a great leader. I mean, he's one of those glue guys, and you knew what you were getting when you got him, and he's one of the reasons you won a World Series, and he's still contributing.
You know, the other thing is Chris Bryant came through with a big hit today. That was important. Rizzo drove in the first run. Those are the guys, I said this morning on the radio, enough. It's time to play now. We're at Memorial Day, and I know I take a more macro look at not the day-by-day, oh, God, they lost, they got to win tomorrow. But it's time for Rizzo and Bryant and Contreras. Your best hitters have got to come through.
Well, what's encouraging for Cub fans, I guess, is the fact that the Cubs have started out modestly in the past few years. So it's not uncommon to see this and to expect better things as the season progresses.
And I expect Rizzo to turn it around. I really do. When you look at his batting average on balls in play, for example, it's unusually low. That should change over the course of the next, well, several weeks or several months. But, Cap, to your point, in baseball, you got to win with your big bats. And when your big bats aren't working for you, you're not going to. I mean, we've seen that with the Dodgers a little bit, too. That's just how this game works. That's why you play 162 games, because it's really that consistency over that span of time and how consistent your stars can be.
The other thing that we haven't talked about, and I know Tyler Chatwood was god-awful the other night in the 10-1 loss, but other than that start, last 10 starts or so, John Lester for his last seven himself, but you go back the last couple weeks, starting pitching has been really good. Hendricks was magnificent today.
And that's encouraging, too, because you think about trades and things they may want to do here in the next few weeks. You wouldn't think they would need to address pitching, unless you maybe want to add another arm in the bullpen. But that starting rotation seems to be pretty solid, so you can look at the bats and maybe you want to add somebody there. But, hey, we all know in baseball, pitching wins. I mean, it's such an important part
pitching
of the game.
Defense
it's
wins.
So important.
And then also, you know, I think today was a good example. What was the seventh inning? When they executed, each guy came to the plate and
they asked Addy to lay a bunt down.
Yes.
Addison does.
Beautiful bunt. And I mean, those so-called little things make a difference in a game.
Yeah, it's important. And when you get John Lester pitching as well as he is in the fourth year of a six-year deal, that's a bonus. Mm-hmm. All right, Theo Epstein also met the media before the game today, and there's been so many rumors. The Orioles in town for four to play the White Sox this week, and a lot of talk about Manny Machado and the Cubs. But Theo threw a lot of cold water on trade talks.
A simple way to put it is there's been a lot of trade rumors involving the Cubs, and there's essentially zero trade talks right now involving the Cubs. So there's a real disparity between the noise and the reality. And unfortunately, you know, sometimes that puts our a player or two that we have in a real tough circumstance. And so it's my job to clarify there's nothing going on right now. And, you know, we have more than enough ability to, you know, to win the division, to win the World Series, and that, you know, we really need to focus on our roster and getting the most out of our ability and finding some consistency. And constant focus outside the organization doesn't do us any good, especially when it's not based in reality right now.
Not based in reality.
Let's go back to last July. Didn't he say something very similar? This group has to get it done. These are our guys right before they went out and got Jose Quintana. Didn't he say something similar to that?
He said they had to show him that they were going to be in the hunt, and they did that. And then he got Quintana. But he also said Quintana was a long-term play, not a stopgap type
play. Key word, though, right now. I mean, anything can change in 24 hours. I still think at some point they're going to try and make some moves here.
Yeah, this is gamesmanship. And I can tell you how these reports emerge. You're telling me that the Orioles don't have somebody right now scouting the Cubs system? You're telling me the Cubs don't have someone on advance at the Orioles right now? No, of course both teams are scouting the assets of one another. And, of course, the possibility exists that this trade could go down. That Theo Epstein may have been telling the truth is entirely a possibility as well. But that's also some gamesmanship there, right? I mean, he doesn't want to give anything away. He wants to do his best by the organization. And if that, you know, it involves throwing a little bit of a smokescreen up in front of this, then he's going to go out and do that.
Right, you covered baseball forever. You've heard this a million times.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the Cubs and Theo are trying to deal from a position of strength. They don't want to appear needy and say, oh, we've got to have Manny Machado. We'll give anything to get him. Yeah, you don't want to give that appearance. Gamesmanship is a good way to.
He also wants to calm Addison Russell and any
absolutely.
Other name.
Of course.
Hey, Mike Montgomery, relax. Yes. We're not talking about you in a trade right now. Our Ankin Law Sports Talk Live poll question. Go to NBCSportsChicago.com/vote. Do the Cubs need to make a big trade before the deadline? Weigh in again, NBCSportsChicago.com/vote. Do they?
Well, you know, like we said earlier, they've started out slowly before. We'll see how long, you know, they're inconsistency continues. If it does continue, sometimes management feels like a big trade like that is needed to jumpstart. Not just adding the tangible assets of the player that they acquire, but to also get the other guys going.
Tough question to answer. In theory, no, because they have a pretty good lineup. But I kind of tend to think if Manny Machado is out there and they can get him, I think they need to make that deal. I mean, it's a guy in his 20s, in the prime of his career. You can sign him to a long-term deal.
Yeah, 100%.
How much are you giving up for a guy who you might not be able
to Doesn't matter if you win a World Series.
I definitely
Series.
Trade Addison Russell for him. And then I would give up a prospect or two for him, too. I really would.
It doesn't matter if you win a World Series.
But you have no guarantee you're going to.
No, you don't. And you had no guarantee you'd win a World Series if you signed Jason Hayward. But that contract's worth it because he was a big component to what was analytically the best defense ever.
Okay, what if
ever.
The phone rang and it's Dan Duquette? And he said, okay, Seth, let's make a deal. I'll give you Machado. I want Happ, I want Russell, and I want Alzolay.
I mean, that's a big haul, but I think you have to consider it. Look at it this way,
Kat.
Would you want to be playing against him in the division? Because the Brewers certainly have the assets to go out and get him.
You cannot make trades because you're afraid that the other team might get him.
No,
cannot.
But when you look at this lineup, it's proven to be solid but also inconsistent. So adding that type of bat would certainly seriously increase your chance of going to the playoffs this year. And then look, you have a chance of re-signing him.
You're giving up so much of controllable assets of good players.
And then let's look at those players.
3 months.
Do you think Addison Russell's the shortstop of the future here?
Maybe.
But do you think he is? Because I think it's Javi Baez. I know Russell is more consistent, but Baez has way more potential. Got a better arm.
They like
he can make more plays. He can. Yeah, I mean, he's a great second baseman. He's a great middle infielder. But at the end of the day, I think that, and you look at Addison Russell, he's disappointed. He has not lived up to expectation. Expectations that I think were unfair, but he's not even close to Barry Larkin. So I think you have to consider trading him. Ian Happ can't get the at-bats here.
And Manny Machado is really one of the best hitters that you're getting, one of the best hitters in baseball.
Getting,
added to a lineup that is very inconsistent. I mean, you never know what you're getting day to day.
If you tell me I can re-sign him?
They have the ability to re-sign him, though, if they want to. They have the financial capability to re-sign him.
Guess what? Thanks. I always wanted to be a Yankee.
It's possible. It's certainly possible. But there's so few teams that are actually going to be in the market for him, because how many teams can really afford him?
And you also have to look at Happ from a standpoint of value. Are you, as the Cubs currently constructed, are you getting full value out of him? Because he's sometimes two guys that are ahead of him in certain positions.
Sahada Sharma, who I have a ton of respect for.
So do I.
Said yesterday that he had a rival executive, not a Chicago executive, say that package for Machado is such a massive overpay, it's laughable.
Doesn't necessarily mean in the end you're going to give that up. If they put Manny Machado on the market, if they want that and you say, well, we're going to have to talk about some other pieces, go talk to somebody else, who knows what other people are going to offer. A lot of times in these trades now you're seeing they're saying there's going to be these big hauls, and then in the end it's like, really? They only got to give up that much for this guy? This happens now in baseball, so there's a chance you get them.
And executives don't dictate that. The market does. I mean, if there are other guys willing to pay high prices and they keep driving up the price on him, then maybe you do have to give that up.
Yeah, I believe.
Teams have overpaid before.
I believe they have
players.
Not had substantive talks. They're doing their homework.
Of course.
And come July, that's when they'll have substantive talks.
Yeah, I mean, they're just doing their due diligence. They've got to be talking about it, at least among themselves, about the possibilities. And like I said earlier, you know, they want to deal from a position of strength. It's
correct.
Like, hey, we don't have to do this, but there's a risk-reward situation here that could benefit the Cubs.
All right. Now, when you make trades and you give up young prospects, you may look down the road and go, wow, I'd love to have that young guy back. Cubs, of course, have tried to develop pitching. One of the guys they developed is now pitching for the White Sox minor league system, and he's really good. Dylan Cease, who you'll be able to see some of these games right here on NBC Sports Chicago. He pitched last night, went 7 1/3, a one earned, four hit, 9 Ks for Winston-Salem. And while he's not ready yet to pitch in the White Sox rotation, this guy throws 99, and he is legit.
It's amazing how many power arms could end up in that White Sox lineup. And you look at the model that Rick Hahn is trying to follow. Yes, he's trying to replicate in some instances what Theo Epstein did, but this team looks like it could be the 2015 Mets.
Yeah, they're putting together some amazing arms.
And when these guys get up here, we got to see what they can do, because right. They kind of need some wins from the minor leagues, mm-hmm. because Giolito hasn't been very good. Obviously, Carson Fulmer, bad. So some of these things that they've done, some of these early guys that they brought up haven't been so good. So they need some of these other guys to come up when they do and be impressive, because if they're going to be good, these guys are all going to have to be a big part of that, because that's what they're banking on.
Would you bring up Kopech and Jimenez and Cease now, or would you – I personally would not.
No.
I'd leave them down there and say – I'll get a really high pick this year. I'll let them move through to AAA. Kopech's already there. And then let's see where we're at.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, the White Sox aren't going anywhere this year anyway. You know, the old adage of a pitcher versus a thrower comes into play. These guys throw to 99 miles an hour, but they need to learn how to change speeds, spot their fastball. All the little intangibles.
Steve Stone said Kopech needs to learn to be a pitcher.
Yes. Yeah.
Let him marinate.
Yes, yes.
I mean, you talk about stuff. A lot of these guys enter the minor leagues with great stuff. Being able to command it is an elite-level skill. That's why a lot of guys get sent down to the bullpen.
Also, Lucas Giolito. At one point, Tim Kirkson told me that they could have traded Lucas Giolito, the Nationals, for Andrew Miller. But they said, no, we cannot let this guy get away. They ended up putting him in the deal for Adam Eaton, and Giolito has been nothing short of awful so far this season. In the month of May, the ERA, 7.33. He was pounded again the other day, yesterday, against the Orioles. Would he be better served in the minors? Or you keep running him out there and you go, I'm going to let him develop right up here?
Yeah, I think you got to let him develop up here. I heard Renteria talking about him needing to sort of harness his emotions. And, you know, for a lot of times these guys are experiencing difficulties and problems for the first time in their careers. Have been dominated at every level, and then they get here to the big leagues and have outings like Giolito's had recently. So you don't know what impact that's having on him and how different pitchers handle the setbacks and the challenges.
And an emotional guy like that, yeah. You don't know how he might handle getting sent down. Bottom line is, I agree with you, Fred. It comes down to handling those emotions and throwing strikes. You know, we've seen this a lot with guys who come up. Again, command. Just said it a minute ago. Guys who can't throw strikes aren't going to survive at the major league level. That's where it starts.
All right, another player hit the market today. Hanley Ramirez was designated for assignment by the Boston Red Sox because he was on pace to have enough plate appearances that he would have vested his option for $22 million for next year. They said, you know what, he's struggling a bit. Done. We're out with him, so he will not vest his option. You're the White Sox, Jason. Do you take a flyer on this guy? Maybe you can flip him at the deadline if he gets going.
No, I don't think so. I don't really think he serves much purpose for them. I don't think there's going to be that much of a market, even if he turns it around for a few weeks. I don't see that being something that, oh my gosh, all these teams are going to knock down the White Sox door and say, we have to have Hanley Ramirez. So I just don't think he fits in their plans.
I just don't know that he increases his value that much that it would net the White Sox a significant asset. I mean, you have to consider the risk and the reward, and to me the risk is high and the reward...
What's the risk?
I mean, what if he wins you some games and then you're picking later in the draft? I mean, that is the risk. I hate to be cynical about it, but you bring a guy in and he hits 350 for you over the course of a month. You know, you win some baseball games, you're picking lower in the draft, that screws up your plan, you don't get your pick top guys, and you don't really get something in return for him.
Yeah, where's he going to play? Third?
Oh, yeah.
Third base? So,
or DH. Or,
yeah. The market for that is, I don't think, as great as a lot of people think. So right. I don't know how
it
fit.
It looks like we've veered off the road to the inevitable Cavs-Warriors NBA final. The reigning champs face elimination after they struggle late once again. So are the Warriors toast? NBC Sports Bay Area's Ray Ratto will join us to discuss. And LeBron James has appeared in the last seven NBA finals. Does that run come to an end tonight, or can LeBron drag his team to yet another series victory?
Crank up the heat and turn on STL. On NBC Sports Chicago, host David Kaplan brings his no-nonsense opinion to the table in a half hour on the topics that are trending with our teams.
We got the most mismanaged basketball team in the history of the world. Which franchise made the gutsiest draft day move?
I think Pac wanted to do this, and he finally got his way.
Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Weeknights at 6 on NBC Sports Chicago.
The defending champions have their backs against the proverbial wall. Warriors face a must-win game 6 tomorrow night after losing another close one last night in Houston. NBC Sports Bay Area's Ray Ratto, one of our favorites, joins us on Sports Talk Live. All right, Ray, there are people that cheer against Golden State simply because they've been there so many times they're tired of them. What's your take on where Golden State's mindset is? Down 3-2 in a series, I don't think people expected it.
Well, they were cranky last night when they left Houston, but when they found out this morning that Chris Paul's not going to play in Game 6, I think their moods brightened a bit because Houston's been playing basically with 7 guys, and now one of their most important is apparently not going to be available for 6 and maybe not 7. So I think they're probably in a better frame of mind than they were 12 hours ago.
When I watch this team play, and I worked in that league as a scout for a few years, so I've seen NBA basketball for so many years, I'm surprised the ball movement isn't as crisp as I'm used to seeing from the Golden State Warriors. It's almost as though it gets in Kevin Durant's hands and he becomes a ball stopper. Why is that? What are they saying out there?
Well, you know, everybody's basically blaming, you know, everybody at any moment, but I think the biggest thing that's happened is that Houston has figured out how to play really good, physical, off-the-ball playoff defense against them. And the Warriors very rarely are made uncomfortable when they have possession of the ball. I think the big reason why the ball isn't moving as well is because Houston's not letting it move well. You know, every cut is contested. Every time a player has the ball, somebody is in his face and hard. I think it's more a tribute to Houston, and in particular Jeff Bezdelic, their defensive specialist, because he's the guy who made this system work. He convinced the players who had not played a lot of defense in the past that this was the way it had to work, and they bought in. They went from being a terrible defensive team to 6th in defensive rating this year, and they've really ratcheted it up against Golden State. So I credit Houston more than I blame Golden State.
Jeff Bezdelic, by the way, a Chicago guy, I might add, and had had very good runs both in the NBA and in college. If you look at the loss of Chris Paul, what do you think that does to Houston defensively, not as much offensively? Does that make it easier for either Curry or Thompson to get a good look?
I think it makes it easier for them to move around the floor, which is really what they do best. And the Warriors, you know, their passes are down about 75 a game. In these last two games, and I think Paul is a major reason. So I think with greater freedom of movement, both Curry and Thompson will be better off, and I think Durant and Green will as well, because the Rockets do so many things and match up so many different ways that I think everybody gets affected by what they do. So I think it makes it much easier for all of them to move and run their offense the way they're used to doing.
Is Andre Iguodala this important? Because I know he's a good player, another Illinois kid. Boy, oh boy, his loss looks like it's really been a problem.
Well, it's the real reason it's a problem is because he's good for about 25 minutes a game, and they have to give those minutes to players who are simply not as good. So that's where you really can tell the difference is the Warriors are not as deep as they've been in the past. And even in the past, Iguodala was hugely important to how they operate and how they parcel out minutes. So I think his general absence, rather than anything specific, is really what's hurt the Warriors, because their defense has been fine, and that is Iguodala's specialty. But the fact that he's simply not there means you see more Quinn Cook and you see more Jordan Bell and guys who really are not used to the grind of playoff basketball. So I think that's where it really shows itself.
You know, when the Chicago Bulls sold their draft pick to Golden State and they took Jordan Bell, the fan base here said, oh boy, there goes a Hall of Fame talent we just got rid of. How is Jordan Bell doing for the whole season, not just now?
Started quickly, then I think he thought that the NBA would be easier than it is, and then started to struggle, was hurt for a while, and really only now is starting to regain some of that early equilibrium. I mean, he's a great leaper. He's not yet really disciplined defensively. He'll bite on a ball fake. He has a lot to learn, but I think the Warriors look at him as somebody that they can build with and on in the future. But he's like most rookies. Learning curve is steep.
Last one for you. Steve Kerr was loved in this town, part of some championship teams. He's also a wonderful guy to deal with. He also is very quotable, whether it's about our sitting president, whether it's about how the NFL is handling anthem protests. Is he that open on a daily basis for guys like you that are around there on topics away from his Warriors?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think he decided a long time ago, and maybe this is because he did a lot of media work, that we can't really hurt them unless they choose to be hurt. So I think he's more open because it's easier for him, rather than trying to figure out how to parse words and try to figure out what's polite speech for a coach and what isn't. I mean, other coaches do it differently. Greg Popovich, you know, shuts down basically almost anything unless it's with somebody he really trusts. But Kerr just doesn't bother with it. He'll talk openly with anybody he's known for a while, and I think he just finds it easier that way. You don't have to remember who you're talking to. You don't have to remember what the script is. He could just be, you know, open and not have to spend a lot of time worrying about it.
Your prediction, what happens the rest of this series?
I think Golden State wins 6, and then 7 I'm going to withhold judgment, because if Paul is back and even at 75%, home teams have had their way with this with the entire playoffs. I think I'll give you Warriors for game 6. I won't give you anything for 7 unless you want to mail me a check.
Thanks a lot, Ray. You're the best. Appreciate the time, man.
Okay, stay dry.
All right, so the Warriors have been pushed to the brink.
What do you think happens? Game six. Game, no Chris Paul.
I think game six, the Warriors win convincingly, and I think they go to Houston and win game seven. Chris Paul has a hamstring injury. I mean, how do you recover from a serious enough hamstring injury to knock him out the last 30 seconds of the most important game of their season, which was last night to that point? He's already out, like we said, for game six. And even if he plays game seven, how good is he going to be? I think the Warriors, even though they haven't played well the last few games, they're not moving the ball well, they're not finishing well, they're not closing out games well, I think they win this series and ultimately the title.
Yeah, the home court means so much, and I think the Warriors will win, and that will probably catapult them.
The Warriors, I believe, like to make 250 passes per game. That's a lot of passes, and that means that Chris Paul is running around the court a heck of a lot, which is tough to do when you got a hamstring injury. So I take the Warriors in seven.
Yeah, I would like to see Houston get them. Not just Warriors, enough. I've been enough with that. It's great, but I'm over them. Love to see Houston. I just don't see how they get it done without Chris Paul.
Right. Yeah, that's
– Yeah, and a healthy Chris Paul. It's right. Like, yeah, Jason raises the real question here. How healthy could he get for Game 7?
Mm-hmm. Cryotherapy, buddy. Cryotherapy. All right, tonight we may see the final game that LeBron James will ever play in a Cavaliers uniform. All that speculation that he could be going, whether it's Houston, the Lakers, Philly. Well, if they lose tonight, his season is over and he has an opt-out in his contract. Do you believe he has played his final game tonight in the Cleveland Cavaliers colors?
Oh, boy, that's a tough one. I don't know what's in his head. I would not be surprised if he stayed.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I'll say no just because I'm not going to bet against LeBron James in the Eastern Conference playoffs until I see someone beat him. You know, I'll stay on that bandwagon until it collapses. Do I think he's going to leave at the end of the year? Yeah, I do.
Where do you think he's going?
I don't know. I mean, I think Philadelphia's a possibility if they want him. L.A. is obviously always a possibility.
I got a good scenario for you guys. You trade 7-22 and Zach LaVine to San Antonio, get Kawhi Leonard, and go sign LeBron and go, hey, marketing Kawhi and LeBron, game on, Bulls, wide open East.
Bulls have not done well in free agency. I think, and this is speculation, obviously, but to me, LeBron James kind of understood he was hated after the decision, and now is this mentality where maybe he wants to be known as the Robin Hood of the NBA because he has that ability. He's so much better than everybody else. That maybe he'll go to like a Philadelphia and bring him a championship.
What is his reputation if he leaves Cleveland again?
I think it's completely fine among Cleveland fans. They didn't want a championship in 50 years till he brought them one. Even if he leaves now, he got them that title. So I don't think it's anything like the last time. I tend to agree with Seth. I think he's going to leave, but you never know with LeBron. Maybe he wants to stay because he is the hero to Northeast Ohio. I think the Cavs win tonight. I do think they lose game seven, and I was on that bandwagon too, that they're going to – you got to beat them in the Eastern Conference. Until they lose, I'm going to believe in them. But, boy, he's playing with a bunch of stiffs other than Kevin Love. I mean, they just don't have much around him. And Boston at home is a different team.
He's a beast.
A third title with a third franchise, too, you know, given the arc of his career, might be too difficult to pass up.
What if Kevin Durant opted out and they said, yeah, you're a ball stopper, we're taking LeBron, and LeBron signed with Golden State? Does that damage his legacy?
Yes.
Completely.
I think if he goes to Houston, it's okay.
I don't think he'd do that. I think he recognizes that. I think he wants to be that alpha. I think he's embraced being that kind of hated guy. And you know, everybody loved the Warriors, regardless of what you said, but I think he liked taking them down. And again, I don't see that scenario happening.
Does that damage his legacy?
Yeah, I think that it would. I mean, I agree. What's he, 33 years old? What else does he want to accomplish? A signature win with another franchise might be it.
Three franchises would be pretty amazing.
And with Cleveland, though, too, I mean, they were bad when he came back there. They had Kyrie Irving, but they hadn't made the playoffs. So he brought them to that level. If he goes to Golden State, so he brought a bad team to be good. This wouldn't do that.
And here's what that would validate, a third championship with a third franchise. A championship with a third franchise is that I don't know that LeBron's the greatest player of all time. He doesn't have that killer instinct like Michael Jordan. But like no other player, he can affect the game in more ways than anybody I've ever seen. When you look at the fact that he can guard every position on the floor. I mean, Magic Johnson could maybe do that in a pinch. LeBron does it consistently. Obviously, he's a great scorer, and look, he's great around the floor. So would I. I'm just saying there are certain elements of his game that stand out amongst everyone else who's played.
He's a monster.